but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I've got a friend who's a grape farmer. I grew up with him, went to high school with him. He's big time into grapes. You go into Safeway or go into Costco, you're probably buying his grapes. They're under a different variety of brand names. I texted with him about 2 weeks ago, and I said, man, is it harvest time or what? And he's like, we're right in the middle of harvest. And I was like, what kind of grapes are you growing? And I was just trying to take an interest in his life, you know, like, you know, ask him, like, what's going on with you? He FedExed me, Stephen, 12 bags of grapes, all different varieties, all come in this cooler packed thing. I got grapes coming out my ears right now, and now I feel obligated to eat them all. I don't know if you're a grape person, but I'll send some your way, Stephen.
Yeah, like all different, like what, I mean, 12 different kinds of grapes. I didn't even know there was more than like red, purple, green.
Very unusual varieties, and red and green. I mean, and they're like, they're giant. I've never seen grapes these big. Anyway,
The cotton candy kind?
It's good to have a grape farmer as a friend. I'm just saying that. Another friend of mine, Andrew Greif, longtime sports writer, formerly of the LA Times, joining us to talk about, you got friends, what kind of, give me your most unusual friendship is in what business, what industry is one of your high school friends making a living in?
Oh, this is easy, John, and first of all, thank you so much for having me on. This is easy, though. My best friend since first grade, we met because we both like Ken Griffey Jr. at Hillcrest Elementary in North Bend, Oregon, and high school locker partners, college roommates all 4 years. He graduated from college and promptly went into farming, kind of like your friend.
Yeah.
And now he runs a business out in the McMinnville area that they will help like graze, bring animals out to graze your vineyard and weed it naturally. It's kind of amazing. I believe it's called Naked Grazing. Sean Johnson is my buddy.
Okay.
And it's amazing. And so I'm always like, when we talk, we always have very interesting conversations. Oh, what'd you do today? Oh, I had to talk to this coach or, you know, hook up with this guy. What'd you do today? I kind of had to deal with some big egos too, like, you know, 200 head of sheep and all this stuff. So, I love it.
And I'm looking at his website right now, and it's true. Like, he'll bring the sheep out to the vineyards, and they go out, and they do what sheep do. They eat all the weeds, and they eat all the things that it's targeted grazing. So you don't have to spray pesticides. You just put the sheep out there.
It's kind of makes a total amount of sense. Sean was the best athlete at our high school, amazing friend, great basketball player, great soccer player, so... he definitely connected over sports, so it feels right that I'm bringing this up on a sports
show. I love it. All right, Andrew Greif, you've covered a whole bunch of things, both from the your days at the Register Guard or the Oregonian, and then the LA Times. I got to ask you about that stuff eventually, but you've got a book that is coming out called Beyond Fast. Tell us about the book. This is about a high school cross country team.
Yeah, this is what last year I really spent about 6 months helping write this book. You know, I've since landed at NBC News. I'm actually at the NBC lot right now, down in LA. It's been a great gig. But before that, I had a time where I could just focus on writing this book. And it's really what I thought was a great story. I covered it when I was at the LA Times to a degree. But it's a running book, right? But it's also not a running book. I think that what people are going to come away with this and why I was drawn to it was that, you know, there's a story of this high school that had never had any success in running, ever. I mean, it was just your average high school, like any suburban Portland high school. And within 5 years, they became the best in history at that. Fastest times ever, One of the runners went to the Olympics last year for the U.S. He's a U.S. 10,000-meter champion. I mean, these guys have gone on to do great things. And the coach said, Sean Brosnan said, I really want to figure out how I can tell how this happened, how we did this. And he believes it all comes from hard running, but also, like, mindset. You have to believe. What you think is fast isn't really fast. You can always go faster. And for me, what I told him when I signed on to write it was, if we've written a running book at the end of this, I think we've failed, because this is something that can kind of apply to a bunch of different people about how you just improve, how you kind of, what you have to sacrifice to get there, what you have to give up, what you have to focus on. And so I'm proud of it, and it comes out September 2nd. Thrilled that we have it in bookstores, and it's, I think it's a great story.
The book is called Beyond Fast. It is really the story of this coach, Sean Brosnan, that you mentioned. There's a little Chip Kelly in him. He's unorthodox, or maybe comes at things from non-traditional thinking. Did you see those parallels? Because, you know, you were familiar with Chip Kelly.
Absolutely. I thought that was something that jumped out to me right from the beginning, was how did this guy seem to get a step ahead of all the other coaches in the country? And really, it was because he didn't follow the path of all of most other coaches in the country. He was, by his own admission, Sean will write in the book, that he was a bad athlete to coach. You know, he was hard-headed in high school. You know, he came up largely through riding BMX. You know, did not really care about track for long stretches of his life. Took years and years to get through college. He bounced around from college to college. And then instead of getting a job right after college, he basically said, you know what, I want to go hang out with as many elite running coaches as I can find and just observe and, like, learn from them. And so I think that gives him what we talk about in the book quite a bit, is instead of just drawing from, like, one or two pretty important, like, mentor figures in his life, he was drawing from 8, 9, 10 different people he learned lessons from, sometimes the hard way, through his own training and observation. So when he gets in front of these high schoolers, it's like, hey, I'm going to teach you what I learned from the pro coaches. I'm going to teach you what I learned from elite college coaches. And that's really what his kind of curiosity to look at basketball coaches and MMA, like, what are they doing right, I think is unique in running.
Andrew, you competed on the track team at Oregon. You were raised near Coos Bay, the hometown of Steve Prefontaine. Did that affect who you became in a way, like that culture that you got, the running culture at Oregon, the running culture as a kid? Or do you think you find your way to running no matter what?
I don't think I would have necessarily found my way to running, because my dad was the track coach at North Bend High School. And so it was just always part of my life, you know, like spending afternoons at the track around my dad's teams was just something that was regular. It's just something we did. And so it was always, at least for me, an assumption that I would spend my springs, you know, jumping in the long jump pit or trying to high jump or sprinting. So I think that's absolutely a nurture thing for me. I don't know just by myself that I would have taken to it. I felt, you know, especially talking to people who don't grow up in that environment, they go, oh, track, I didn't really think that was a thing. And for me, it was just the expectation from myself, of course I'll be doing this. So, yeah, it was, I think, from day one, my parents say that in the delivery room that my dad was talking with another coach from the high school team about the meet the upcoming week. So I think you could say that it was been with me since I was born.
This is fantastic stuff, and I'm eager to see the book come out. How do you balance writing the book with maybe the work you're doing at NBC?
I mean, it was, for me, it's kind of, it reminded me of becoming a parent when all of a sudden you have this huge commitment as part of your life, and how do I balance that? And you just sort of make time, you carve out time wherever I could. I mean, I wrote, you know, with Sean and Chris Lear, who were the other authors of the book, there's three names in the front. And we really had this great synergy of working together. And a lot of it, I did kind of my part last summer while at the Olympics in Paris. You know, like I would spend my nights at the track at Stade de France, freelancing for, you know, a bunch of different outlets. But in the mornings, I'd be going back and forth with Sean and Chris Lear, who's the author of Running with the Buffaloes, which is a cult classic running book, a season with the University of Colorado team from 25 years ago. That's an absolute kind of mainstay of any running book collection you might have. And we just go back and forth on it. Hey, what do you think about this? Or, Sean, I want to know more about this moment or this meet. And so that's how it was the whole process. I just carve out, you know, a few hours here and there. We'd all talk together. We'd kind of put our ideas down on paper, and then we'd move on to the next idea. So it's there was nothing, I would say, that I did that felt unusual than my normal reporting. You know, you have to carve out time for reporting. You have to carve out time for writing and then revising.
Andrew Greif with us, formerly of the LA Times. He has written a book. It is coming out here in short order. It's going to be really exciting, I think, to kind of get that thing in your hands and see it in stores. Simon & Schuster is the publisher, but the book is called Beyond Fast, if you're looking for it. It is the story of Sean Brosnan, a renegade coach in an unlikely high school team that changed distance running. Andrew Greif with us. Andrew, can we, for a minute, step back. I want to talk a little bit. We've been talking a little bit about race dynamic in locker rooms. And, you know, Shedeur Sanders, Dylan Gabriel fighting it out for a job in Cleveland, and a lot of people trying to make it about what, you know, whatever they think it's about. But in the NBA, you were in locker rooms. Race is a topic of conversation, or is an evident pressure in any locker room. But in the NBA in particular, I think in recent years, we've seen that become a conversation place. How often did that come up in talking with players, talking with executives, and how do teams balance that?
I think what I came away with in the pro locker room setting, which was obviously I had more access covering the NBA than I ever did to the locker room in college, where there's virtually no access to a locker room. It's really after only a bowl game when you ever really get to step foot in there. But the NBA, it's every day, and you can be in there, you can have conversations. What I think that my impression from 5 years day in and day out around the NBA was that teammates want to have someone next to them who they know and trust will do their job. And it's sort of like, hey, whatever it is, if I know I can count on you, you could have played at a junior college last year. If I can count on you, I don't really care what it is or how you got here or who you are or your makeup. I really found that again and again. I mean, the Clippers would bring in players and they test them out. I remember Isaiah Hartenstein, before he was the, you know, integral piece of Oklahoma City Championship, he was fighting for the last spot on the roster 1 year in training camp. And he was, you know, a guy who had a lot of potential but hadn't really made it yet. He was competing against a guy who was an amazing high school player. And they had very different backgrounds. And it was just, I think at the end, you could tell that players just thought, hey, Hartenstein gets it. Like, I really, really trust what he can bring. So that's always been my experience, and I really respected that because, honestly, not to bring this back too full circle, but I remember very much with you, when I was interviewing for a job at the Oregonian, I had a very non-traditional background of, like, I wasn't a beat writer really yet. I was a copy editor in Eugene, British Guard, and I remember you very vividly telling me, I don't care if you were selling books before this or worked at a bookstore. If I can trust you that you're going to cover this beat hard and well, then I want you to be my teammate. And I really found that to be the case in the NBA and pro sports because, again, if someone isn't doing their job, that could mean you could lose your job. So competence is what values more than anything.
Andrew Greif with us. All right, before I cut you loose, Oregon, you watched the rise of Oregon football. You were there. You had a front row seat. Then you saw it from the vantage point of being in, you know, L.A., one of the biggest media markets in the country, watching Oregon, you know, go from blossoming into rocket fuel, and now you see them in the Big Ten Conference. What do you make of the Oregon story when people tap you on the shoulder and say, how did that happen, or what was that like? What do you tell them?
I mean, I just remember very much in college when I was at Oregon, that's working at the student newspaper, and they were trying to recruit Terrell Pryor. And I remember almost like this shock around campus and that they were even in the conversation for a five-star, you know, top five guy in a certain class. It was like, wow, just even being mentioned, lucky us. That was a win in by itself. I think now what's remarkable is that the expectation is there. I remember even covering the team, and there was 2013, 2014, there was such a discussion about, well, it's really hard to recruit to Oregon. And now, there's just, that's not even talked about anymore. It's expected that you would be a top five class or at least top 10. And I think that mirrors the entire conversation around Oregon. It's no longer just, look at us, a plucky school that has really a lack of precedent for being here. This is amazing that we're on this stage. I think year in, year out, it has truly become, well, you know, if it's not a conference title, then it's sort of a bust of a year. And if we need to go further than that, that's just what is, it comes with the territory. And that's the big change, you know. I can't underscore that enough. Like, if you had said 10 wins per season, that would have guaranteed you job security for life. And now it's like, that's the bare minimum expected at Oregon. It's a sea change, and the flashy uniforms help, and the facilities certainly help, the infrastructure. But along the way, the mindset really changed. And again, I tie that back to, honestly, what I learned about this book was, it was sort of like, yeah, why shouldn't we be there? These runners ask themselves, why can't we be the best in the country? Just like Oregon football, who has, in some ways, no business being there a quarter century ago, saying, yeah, why can't we be in the top five conversation every year? It's pretty amazing what happens when you just start to think differently.
Andrew, you were a student at Oregon at the time, but you were also an aspiring journalist. Did that impact your view of football, or were you able to enjoy it as a student?
Well, I mean, my first 2 years at Oregon, I was a student, and I was also an athlete, like you mentioned, on the team. So obviously I was like fully in on Oregon as like a participant of and fan of the team. And then really when I joined the student newspaper before my junior year, I just sort of cut that part of my life off. And I think people find that when you tell them that, they find it really hard to believe, like, you can just sort of do that. And for me, it was easy. I mean, you've gone through the same thing, I'm sure, where you just say, this is a job now, and I just don't care about it in the same way. And that doesn't mean it's a bad thing. It just means that, for me, it was the only professional option I had. So I found it to be very easy and almost, like, freeing. You know, it's like week-to-week results didn't move the needle on mood or temper anymore. It was just, let's just document the story. And I've really actually enjoyed that part. I just feel like it allows you to sift through a weekend of results in a much more like analytical way and see what matters and what doesn't. And obviously when you're thinking about only from a fan perspective, you can be blinded pretty hard. So I've actually enjoyed being able to just sit back and think about, you know, the trends I'm seeing in sports and from like an observer perspective.
I love it. Love that perspective. Congrats on the book. When it comes out, we'll talk about it again. Love to have you back on as well. I'll let you get back to work. Thank you, Andrew.
Hey, I appreciate it.
All right. There he goes. Formerly of the LA Times. He's got a book out. I encourage you to check it out if you're into running. And by the way, if you're not into running as well, Andrew Greif and this book coming out, Beyond Fast. Simon & Schuster is the publisher. It's called Beyond Fast. Andrew Greif is the author. Our Big Splash is coming up.